podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort before March 27th for travel dates between April 11th and August 14th, 2010, you could save up to 45% on your accommodations or even get a Disney gift card valuing up to $750. For more information on this special offer and many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today. Resales DVC is your home for Disney Vacation Club resales. Whether you're buying or selling your part in the Disney Vacation Club, Resales DVC is prepared to walk you step-by-step through the process and make sure your experience is as pleasant as possible. For pricing, availability, and more information, be sure to contact Grandma Jackie and Kin at www.resalesdvc.com or by phone at 866-544-2919 to make your vacation dreams come true.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
You're just young!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it. I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome.
Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the WDW News Today podcast, a variety show dedicated to the Walt Disney World Resort and its many fans. At this time, please welcome your host for a show where anything is possible, Tom Corliss.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the WDWNT podcast. This is episode 138 for April 5th, 2010. On this week's show, we have the long-awaited return of the Golden Age. In this controversial discussion featuring Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom, we will continue our quest land by land, area by area, and space by space throughout the Vacation Kingdom to find what is truly the Golden Age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. This and much more Walt Disney World information and fun awaits you on this edition of the WDW News Today podcast.
Interrupt this podcast to bring you this special message.
Do not attempt to fast forward your iPod.
When you signed up to be obsessed with Disney parks, you started listening to weird Disney music.
You had moved on, so to speak, from Circle of Life and Part of Your World to more, how shall we say it, nerdy pieces of music like Energy You Make the World Go Round and Delta Dream Flight.
And that was good for a while. But what's the next step?
What happens when the music you once thought was exciting and new becomes everyday and mundane?
That's where we come in. I'm Brandon Struve.
And I'm Banksley. And we are the hosts of SOS, the Super Obscure Show.
We at SOS strive to bring you the most obscure pieces of Disney audio known to man. We want to give you new music to listen to.
Some of the music is good. Some is great. Some is pretty darn bad. But it's all new, hopefully.
So tune in to Brandon and Banks SOS, now playing daily on the WDWN Tunes at 9 a.m. and 11 p.m. Walt Disney World Standard Time.
We have new episodes released every Friday, so there's always something new and exciting for you to listen to.
We'll see you at the end tunes. We now return to the podcast previously in progress.
Ancient Rome or Greece? Athens or Sparta? Birthday Land or Starland? Let us find out when was the golden age of the Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome to the Golden Age, where we continue our quest to find, somehow mathematically, the Golden Age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. We're going to be going land by land, area by area, and space by space. And tonight, that space just happens to be Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom. And you chose that on the WDW News Today community forums, so that's what we're doing. Joining me for the segment tonight, Mr. Anthony Iacullo.
Hello, everyone.
Scott Smith.
Curse you, Mr. Nibs.
What?
That's the Shih Tzu that took my thumb.
What is that from?
That's from my life.
Oh. Just was so random. I had no... It sounded like a movie reference. I don't know. We tend to do those a lot.
And then anyway. I made it swallow a clock so I know when it's coming.
Anyway. Sir. The show just gets weirder and weirder as the numbers progress forward.
We're just in the introductions and it's already bizarre.
Yeah. Sir Chris Lestraps of California.
Salam.
And Sir Diffendall of Pennsylvania.
Hey, howdy, hey.
Yes.
Sir Jason of Beard.
Sir Jason of Beard. My, yes. Oh my, we can't even start a segment. You just want to do an English accent tonight because we're talking about Fantasyland. It's got that medieval theme. But anyway, let's talk about the eras of Fantasyland as we usually do in this segment. We're going to name a few eras. Our panel gets to choose from those specific eras, and whichever one gets the most votes is what wins. And that winning era number, the year, gets added into our mathematical equation in the end that's going to help us figure out when was the golden age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. So first we have to introduce those eras. And it all started in 1971 with the opening of the Magic Kingdom theme park, and it opened with Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Snow White's Scary Adventure, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Mad Tea Party, Cinderella's Golden Carousel, Dumbo the Flying Elephant, The Mickey Mouse Review, Peter Pan's Flight, It's a Small World, King Stefan's Banquet Hall, the Fantasyland Art Festival, the Castle Camera Shop, the Lancer Inn, Tinkerbell's Toy Shop, the Troubadour Tavern.
Troubadour.
Troubadour. What does that mean? Does that mean something?
It's like a trumpeter.
Okay, there you go.
Not a troubadour. I don't know what that is.
It's not a word I use very often. And you have the... It's getting violent in here. The Aristocats Store, the Fantasyland Pavilion, the Royal Candy Shop, and Pinocchio's Village Huss. And that's 1971 in a nutshell. In our next era, we jump all the way to 1988. And we have the Magic Journeys 3D show from Epcot moving over to the Magic Kingdom to replace the empty theater of the Mickey Mouse Review. We have Gurgies, Munchies, and Crunchies coming in. We got Mickey's Christmas Carol, a completely Christmas store. The Disney Anna store, selling lots of collectibles. And as well, the Enchanted Grove, selling wonderful drinkable items over near the Tomorrowland side of Fantasyland. And then we move on to the 1994 era, which brings in the refurbishment of Snow White's Scary Adventures to make it Snow White's Adventures, an attempt to make it more family-friendly and actually add Snow White into the attraction. Yeah, you're not Snow White anymore. And then there's the Fantasy Fair store. There is the Legend of the Lion King replacing Magic Journeys. There's the Sword in the Stone show with Merlin. Tinkerbell's Treasures opens, Lumiere's Kitchen as well, Hook's Tavern opens, and Dumbo the Flying Elephant version 2 debuts, a more elegant style of the ride, themed to look like the version that had just opened recently in Disneyland Paris. No longer was it that ugly tie-dye-looking disco ball thing they used to have.
Crazy.
Yeah, and believe it or not, they still have that in Tokyo. Unbelievable.
Well, they're into disco.
Yeah, I guess so. Then you have the 1999 era, which brings in the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh to replace Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, the removal of the Fantasyland Skyway, you have Sir Mickey's opening, Ariel's Grotto, the Fantasyland Character Festival replaces the now-shuttered 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you have Cinderella's Royal Table also opening, replacing King Stefan's Banquet Hall. Then have the 2003 era, which has Mickey's Philhar Magic replacing the Legend of the Lion King, excuse me. And that's all for that era, actually. And then in 2005, we have the huge refurbishment of It's a Small World. The ride returns refreshed and new. And we also have the opening of Pooh's Playful Spot on the former land occupied by the Fantasyland Character Festival and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So those are the eras you have to choose from, ladies and gentlemen. Let's begin. Anthony Akula, what era are you going with?
I actually chose 2003 for one reason and one reason only. Mickey's Philhar Magic, my favorite 3D show.
Well, it's the only thing in that era we listed, so that's got to be it.
Well, yes.
It's only one reason available.
It's only one reason and only one thing changed.
I sort of felt the It's a Small World refurb and Pooh's Playful Spot were sort of negligible for me, so.
Really? The Small World refurb?
It was a lot of prettying it up more
meh.
Than.
Meh.
The ride looked magnificent, but it wasn't enough to sway Anthony.
No.
Meh.
I had to go with 2003 for Philhar Magic.
There you go. And the Golden Age dies a little bit tonight. But anyway, Scott Smith.
I am also going with 2003. I have gone on and on and on and on and on about how much I love Philhar Magic, how I think it's the pinnacle of Disney imagination and magic in the parks. I love it. That's the era because it opened. It was fresh. I don't really like Pooh's Playful Spot. I think it's a little irritating that they added another playground and it's not a lot of much of a playground. It's mostly like a tree.
Yeah, but it only, you know, Pooh's Playful Spot is on its deathbed right now, and you're insulting.
Yeah, well, now. Listen, what did it ever do for me? Nothing.
It ends up being a footnote on the history of the Walt Disney World.
It has an homage to 20,000 Leagues in it.
There you go.
It keeps kids out of line.
Well, whatever. Philhar Magic is amazing. Philhar Magic is amazing. It gets my vote.
There you have it.
Yep.
Crystal Straps.
I'm surprised that one attraction is defining eras, as great as that attraction is.
Well, I think when you pick 2003 as well, you're also picking
Peter Pan
the other
is
changes
there, yeah.
that come before that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're obviously also picking Winnie the Pooh over Mr. Toad.
It's a better ride. As I loved Mr. Toad.
You take the loss of the Skyway. You take the loss of the 20,000 Leagues, obviously, and a lot of other things, but
which
you know, Philhar Magic is a big addition for Fantasyland.
Which brings us to my era of 1994, because you still had 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah, for a little bit.
I still miss. We still had Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. These were two attractions that defined my childhood. At Disney World that I just love and miss both at that park to this day. I like the changes to Snow White, that you're actually, it's more of a traditional dark ride and that you're not playing Snow White because I just was never really good in that role. And I love Legend of the Lion King as a show. I thought it was a very great show. Certainly, I do enjoy Mickey's PhilharMagic better now in that space, but at that time, it was really enjoyable. Crazy that it would lead to be three Lion King shows at one time at the resort. Got a little out of hand, but...
Well, certainly a movie of that magnitude, it could get away with it.
No, certainly. But yeah, it was a great attraction. It fit in really well there. And you take everything before that. I mean, all the classic stuff that's there and Fantasyland, the stuff that comes later has been... there's been some detractions. I mean, Skyway going away, Pooh coming in my opinion, and some enhancements, filler magic. But I think if I was to go back to any Fantasyland, I'd pick 1994.
Here you go. Jason Diffendahl.
Well, I am going to choose the 2003 era for one reason and one reason only. Now, I am going to choose the 2003 era, which is the Mickey's PhilharMagic era. And here's my issue, is that I think between 1971 and around the year 2000, Fantasyland was very unchanging. It was very sort of...
I would maybe put that to 94 when 20,000 Leagues closed.
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, but how long was 20,000 Leagues there after... How long was the lagoon there after it closed before they finally got rid of the lagoon? That's
but also around 94, you have Lion King coming in and Snow White gets the refurbishment and the Sword in the Stone. And there's a lot of change around the mid-90s.
There were. That was that the mid-90s and 94 was the first time that anything actually ever significantly happened to Fantasyland.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I can understand completely where Chris is coming from, because the 94 era was the first significant overhaul of Fantasyland since the park opened. And I think for me, what happened when Legend of the Lion King was replaced by Mickey's PhilharMagic was they began to take what in that case was sort of a tired 3D theater and turn it into something that is really a headlining attraction. And Mickey's PhilharMagic was a tremendous leap forward in 3D attractions. And it turned into a defining attraction in the park. And I think nothing in Fantasyland on that scale since 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea probably was such a defining attraction in Fantasyland. I mean, you could argue for It's a Small World and there's a lot of classics, and I'm not talking about classics. I'm talking about attractions that people attractions that people go for first when they enter Fantasyland. 20,000 Leagues certainly was one, and I think until PhilharMagic, there wasn't another one. And so PhilharMagic is I think, a real turning point in Fantasyland, because it brought back the Fab Five. And that was a significant turning point alone in the Disney parks up until 2003. I mean, there were all kinds of attractions at all of the parks that were so focused on the current characters that were in the current movies and things. And the Fab Five had been ignored for a long period of time. And PhilharMagic was a very significant return of the Fab Five in such a headlining attraction as well. And so I think, for Fantasyland and for a lot of other reasons actually concerning PhilharMagic, I chose 2003 as my golden age.
Well, Jason has a great point, because it didn't only bring back the Fab Five, but it brought back a lot of other classic characters to a more, I want to say, pure
state. A lot of them were more contemporary, though.
Well, Ariel got really, you think of her and you think of Voyage of the Little Mermaid, which is really, in my opinion, not a great show. You cut so much out of it.
Well, you get rained on in there. That's a great show.
I just think, they brought the heart back to so many characters that we're getting stretched, and Simba has more of a place than he kind of does in the Circle of Life, and not maybe not Animal Kingdom, but And
I would say now, more so than even Animal Kingdom.
Like Aladdin, I think of PhilharMagic, not the magic carpets where he's just a voiceover telling you what to do. You know,
You're right. The characters were getting too cheapened by just slapping them onto off-the-shelf attractions.
Yeah.
And you're right. It did. It brought them back to a significant new attraction with a storyline that actually required characters as opposed to just slapping them on something to call it the magic carpets of Aladdin and theme it to something that looked like a magic carpet.
And that's a great segue into the future of Fantasyland, the Fantasyland Forest, where, you know, we're not talking about some cheap off-the-shelf spinning roller coaster in Dinoland, but we are we are talking about these original experiences that are themed very nicely to the original films. The characters are going right into their film settings in these rides, meet and greets, and restaurants. So, no more of that. Sure, they're moving Dumbo over, but, you know, no more spinning rides and stuff of that nature for these characters. Instead, fully fleshed out worlds, not just a little covered area and a water playground for Ariel anymore. She's actually her own dark ride.
Right. Exactly, and now maybe hopefully Adventureland will get some money to get a proper Aladdin attraction.
Well,
where?
Yeah, I don't know where. Just do
I don't
it.
Even care if Adventureland gets a proper Aladdin attraction as long as they get rid of the magic carpets and bring back.
It's not that bad.
No, it's right in the middle, and it makes it.
But here's the thing too: is magic carpets was brought in there because Dumbo just couldn't handle the traffic that it was getting, and
that's what I'm thinking.
That worked, but when the new Dumbo opens. After the Fantasyland expansion, it really may not be necessary anymore.
Dueling magic carpets.
Well, no, but
the Adventureland Forest.
You know, if Dumbo can handle the traffic in with a reasonable wait time, magic carpets will really serve no purpose anymore.
Is carpets really something they built for the Dumbo problem, or is it really just more a park capacity thing?
Well, in both, in a sense.
Yeah, I don't see them get rid of carpets. I mean, Tokyo is now going out of their way to, 10 years later, add that attraction for some reason.
Well, I mean, it certainly does help the capacity problem, but it's also targeted at the Dumbo crowd. I mean, who else is it targeted at? It's a higher capacity
Aladdin.
Version of Dumbo where,
you
know, instead of just going up and down, you tilt as well. And I mean, it's a bit of an upgrade, but really, it's targeted at the exact same demographic.
Yeah.
It just kind of fits there, but.
But I think the problem is, I guess they feel maybe all of Adventureland isn't friendly to little children.
Oh, it's not, and I mean, you're
even
right.
Pirates might not be friendly to the smaller kids.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely not. But it fits there, and I don't, I don't necessarily want to see them rip it out with no replacement. I think they could just get a quality. Something of higher quality in there. And the other thing that I sort of lament is that used to be a really nice open courtyard area. And
that's what I really miss about it.
Exactly.
There's also that big planter was in the middle there too.
Yeah, so I mean that's one thing that I don't like is the congestion that those sorts of things add to the park. So that would be, you know, if they're going to put something in, they should not stick it in the way. But anyway, we're getting way off topic here.
Apparently we are. Well, we were talking about the filler magic, a new era, perhaps, with these animated film characters. And you were talking about slapping animated characters on,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Spinning
no,
rides and things
it's related.
Of that nature. Yeah,
it's real.
Well, nonetheless, 2003 wins, but I still have to go. This was actually a very tough choice. I want to pick 2005 because the Small World refurbishment was wonderful. Finally, what I feel is the best version of the ride. It's probably not the best facade and entrance. That's probably Anaheim. The ride portion itself, by far the best. But really, the new sound system and updating the ride, wonderful in 2005. And finally filling in at least something in the 20,000 League spot, temporary. But it's hard to pick 2005 when you know what's coming in, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. So we can't really pick 2005 if they're really trying to perfect the 2005 era now. And then looking at all these other eras, I could pick 1999, because I like Winnie the Pooh better than Mr. Toad. Not that Mr. Toad's a bad ride, I just think Pooh is a much-needed upgrade. And I did like the Fantasyland Character Festival a lot, but you know what? I'm actually going to go with 1971. And I usually don't go with these really old eras, but in this case, I think 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is such an amazing e-ticket attraction that really was closed long before its time was over. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll finally get over it now with this new expansion. There'll finally be stuff that's really, really awesome in that place. And so maybe it's a good thing it closed back when it did. Is that film relevant to your average guest anymore? Probably not.
But neither is Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yeah, but you think about it.
That's still open.
Exactly. But if you think about it, I mean, look at Disney on the Submarine Voyage. You know, retheming that to Finding Nemo. That probably would have happened here if those subs were still operating. Probably would have got new subs and probably would have became a Nemo ride. But nonetheless, that didn't happen.
That really begs the question, though, too, is that... would Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage fit thematically in Fantasyland?
Does it at Disneyland? No.
Well,
Tomorrowland.
I mean, I would argue that it fits a little better in Tomorrowland than Fantasyland. I mean, that wasn't a whimsical fairy tale movie at all.
Well, Fisher talking.
Yeah, I know, yeah, but I'm saying it's not the same type of movie as Snow White and Peter Pan. So I mean,
I agree, but I think we lose a very unique ride experience in the subs.
I don't disagree at all.
Subs is a ride system that it's not one of the things like an Omni Mover that there's 12 of them.
No, there was one
submarine ride and we lost it.
I would rather have Finding Nemo subs than no subs at all. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's an amazing ride system.
It just wouldn't have been a perfect thematic fit in Fantasyland, in my opinion.
I don't know. Well, it would have had to bridge the gap, really, between, you know, Fantasyland and Tomorrowland in a lot of ways.
Like the original attraction did.
20,000 Leagues did very well. Yeah, exactly.
Good point.
It was a perfect transition. It really bordered on fantasy of that Jules Verne type tomorrow. But, you know, it's such a tremendous loss. And in 1971, that was by far the defining headliner because it was the one major e-ticket for Walt Disney World that Disneyland didn't have. They had the Submarine Voyage, but this ride was really that with a wonderful story and a tie-in at that time, a movie that was still very much relevant to American pop culture. So 20,000 Leagues in 1971 really made the Magic Kingdom along with Haunted Mansion and Jungle Cruise and things like that. But that was the one defining, you know, signature original ride. There's also another original attraction that unfortunately we lost in 1980 that is wonderful. Mickey Mouse Revue.
Yeah.
I know Mickey's Filler Magic is great. I love Mickey's Filler Magic. Unfortunately, I never got to see Mickey Mouse Revue. I only got to see videos and such of it. But this is what was great about Disney World when it opened in 1971, was these tour de force animatronic shows. Country Bear Jamboree, Tropical Serenade, Hall of Presidents, Mickey Mouse Revue. Just saying how many animatronic characters can we shove into one show. And it was wonderful, because it was the first time really in an attraction that Mickey and all these other different groups of characters got thrown together. You had the Three Caballeros, you had... who else was in it? Snow White was in there, and Cinderella, and I'm trying to think who else.
And a bunch of other random animals, all seven dwarves.
And yeah, all these random characters thrown together in an animatronic stage show that was just wonderful. And Tokyo really lucked out when they got that show when they opened in 1983. And unfortunately, they just closed it, and it's gone forever. But nonetheless, another wonderful opening day. These were the two real original opening day attractions that really set Disney World apart from Disneyland in the 1970s, was 20,000 Leagues and Mickey Mouse Revue, and they both opened in Fantasyland. So those two are, I think, the defining factors in my choice as 1971. Will it change in 2012, 2013? Possibly. But I think those two rides are just such a big deal in the history of Walt Disney World. But again, other than that, because of those two rides, and you have Peter Pan and Small World and Snow White and Toad and all that other great old stuff, I pick 1971. But nonetheless, 2003 won anyway. So 2003 will be thrown into our great big equation, and eventually when we wrap up all these Golden Age segments, we will find out the Golden Age of the Walt Disney World Resort.
Oh, you're close to your along, hop up here, and we'll go for a jolly ride. The open road, the dusty highway. Come, I'll show you the world. Travel, change, excitement. Ha, ha, ha. Come along, hop up here, and we'll go for a jolly ride. The open road, the dusty highway. Come, I'll show you the world. Travel, change, excitement. Ha, ha, ha.
You front-faced little twit! Why shall I get me hands on you?
What's the big idea then?
Cops! Down the crows! Watch out! When he knocked me off the ruddy scaffold!
Hey, move that blooming thing!
Guilty! Thank you, that is all!
I'm here with Adam Roth and Jason Diffendahl of WDW Celebrations to tell you about a special gathering this July at the Disneyland Resort.
It's called 55, a celebration of Disneyland's 55th anniversary from the folks who brought you Celebration 25, A Wild Decade, and Studio 20.
Join us Thursday, July 15th through Saturday, July 17th for our special fan event full of fun group experiences, including our trademark history walk and scavenger hunt, and maybe even a few surprises.
For more details and to register, go to wdwcelebrations.com, or you can join in the discussion at wttmforums.com.
That's 55, a WDW Celebrations commemorative event coming this July to the Disneyland Resort. Don't miss it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode 138 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I would like to thank you for listening. You make this show possible and worth producing each and every week. It's now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful information you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you have not done so already, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know about the show. Be sure to visit the WDWNT Network community forums to vote for upcoming segments and to view the show notes for this and previous episodes. And of course, you can do that at wdwnewstoday.com/forums, F-O-R-U-M-S. Do not forget to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT. As well, you can make me a friend on Facebook at facebook.com/WDWNT. WDWNT The Weekend is quickly approaching August 26th through the 29th, 2010 at the Walt Disney World Resort. For more information and to sign up for all the group meals that are registered, registration is open for those already, by the way, go to WDWNTTheWeekend.com. Come on down and join us. It's going to be a boatload of fun, and we hope to see you there. Coming up on next week's show, episode 139, we've got your Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report. As well, we'll wrap up March Madness, give you all the final results, that basically a recap of our April 9th live show, and we'll do that on the next episode, number 139. And since I just previewed the next episode, that means that this one is over, and it's time to end it with the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon!
Gee, when you find the dream inside your heart, anything is possible. Dreams come true.
Thank you for listening to the WDW News Today podcast. Be sure to join us again next week and visit the entire WDWNT network online at WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summer saying goodnight and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Wherever you may go.
And find the dream inside.